Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and views of our callers. We welcome your calls at out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Dr. Merrill Nash. We're going to be talking about the anthrax vaccine and other vaccines, but Dr. Nash has certainly been right on top of this anthrax problem and the problem of vaccines as a whole. Dr. Nash, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, now, of course, where do we stand with the anthrax vaccine? Have they gone ahead and really vaccinated all of the troops going overseas, and have they been able to give them a complete course of these shots? Because my understanding is it takes 6 months six shots and 18 months to get a full course. Are we sending our boys over partly vaccinated, or what?
Yes, we are, and again, they're doing... Precisely, the military is doing what it has done for the last 4.5 years, which is they believe you're going to get sufficient protection with 2 or 3 shots, and they don't really have a deep commitment to necessarily fulfilling the full 6-shot FDA-recommended dosage with it. So people are generally getting these vaccine doses, the first 3, while they're overseas. On board ship is most common because they don't have access to information about the adverse effects while they're shipboard.
Well, now, is this still considered an experimental vaccine, or has it been actually cleared by the FDA?
It's a very complicated question to answer. It's been cleared by the FDA as of last January, after the anthrax letters. Tommy Thompson said the FDA is going to license the anthrax vaccine plant within the next 6 weeks, and it took them about 3 months, but they licensed it.
Now, did they license it based upon scientific evidence, or was it sort of the old arm-twisting situation? I mean, do you want to retire with a pension, or do you want to be fired right now?
Exactly. Well, we think the FDA had their arm twisted, but they have acceded to sort of bending the rules for the Department of Defense many times, so this was really nothing new. It is the charge of a lot of people that the vaccine was never adequately tested for inhalation, and that makes it experimental for the purpose for which it's being used, which is biological warfare.
Well, now,
go ahead,
I'm sorry.
No, the military actually, somebody was sharp in the military, probably a military lawyer, and decided to say that they were actually giving the vaccine to soldiers to prevent them against the possibility that that they would contact cutaneous anthrax to try to cover their act on this issue of it not being properly licensed for inhalation. So that's an interesting wrinkle that happened this year.
All right. Now, how effective is the vaccine? In other words, will this cover all the various species of anthrax, or is it really very effective against a couple of other very species of anthrax?
Nobody knows how effective it will be in the field. It depends which animal. Of course, it hasn't been tested in humans. You can't give humans a vaccine and expose them to anthrax. So we have animal models, and it depends which animal you look at. If you look at the rat or the mouse, even when vaccinated, most of them are going to die when exposed to various strains of anthrax.
In other words, is there 1 or 2 strains that it's really very effective against, and then other strains is not effective against?
Yes.
So if you know the strain of anthrax that's going to be used, then it's not a bad vaccine, at least if you're a mouse or a rat.
Right. It's claimed that monkeys do well with this vaccine, but as far as I'm aware, they've only tested 3 strains of anthrax in the monkey, because monkeys are expensive. We're never going to find out until the time, if we're ever exposed, our troops are ever exposed to anthrax, then we'll find out.
But it seems to me that what they're really doing is taking a vaccine that they know is good for a few strains, and of course, assuming if it's good for a few strains, that our enemy will be cooperative enough to use those strains.
And use them on vaccinated troops while knowing that they could suffer nuclear retribution. So obviously, all this vaccine does is force the other side, if they decide to use biological weapons, to pick another agent.
All right, fine. Or maybe a different strain of anthrax.
Or a different strain, exactly.
Or, of course, if we were planning on using that, and oh, I would hate to think that, but is there any rationale for vaccinating your people from anthrax unless you know the strain that's going to be used?
Well, in my mind, there isn't. But you brought up this whole question of how good are vaccinations. And they may be very good when used against native, naturally occurring strains of anything. Anthrax, smallpox, plague, Ebola. We're developing vaccines for plague and Ebola now. But when you are talking about using a biological weapon against troops, this is going to mean that you have time to, the perpetrator has time to select the most highly virulent strains of the organism and possibly add genes that will make the organism vaccine resistant.
In other words, make them vaccine resistant so they'd be more lethal.
Exactly. So whether a vaccine is ever going to be able to provide troops or civilians with a very strong defense against biological warfare is really an open question, and people should not be sanguine about the fact that vaccines are out there, because they may protect against nothing that you actually see in the field.
All right, fine. And I think that these are the things that need to be brought out. Dr. Kenneth Alibak, and we've talked about him in the past. We've talked to him personally. He was the number two man of the Soviet biowarfare unit. And he says we ought to start trying to learn how to build up our own immunity so at least we would have some immunity against this. And as he told me personally, he had taken some 56 vaccines. He was so allergic, he couldn't eat hardly anything. He couldn't touch anything. And, of course, this is what happens when you take 56 different highly toxic vaccines or the vaccines that challenge your immune system. We're going to be back here with Dr. Nash in just a few minutes to explore more of this fascinating subject. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I just want to mention a couple of products. The first one is Be Alive Royal Jelly products. And if you feel run down at the end of the day, if you feel that you just need something to give you some more energy so you can get more things done, let me suggest you seriously consider taking Be Alive Royal Jelly products. I've taken this for 8 to 10 years as my wife. We like the product, and of course we were very pleased when Be Alive people came and asked if they could sponsor us for a month. And so we said, sure. Well, one should understand that this is not an energy pill. In other words, you take this pill and you don't feel better right away. You take it regularly for several months. And at the end of 3 months, you should be feeling better. And if you're not, why, you call them at 866-233-7500 and ask for your money back. But give them a call at 866-233-7500 and ask for the Be Alive Royal Jelly products. Use them. I think you'll be very, very pleased. Then if you'd like to get, of course, information on Alimax, which is the active ingredient in garlic, it is basically pure allicin, the allicin molecule, and this really seems to help as far as immune system. At least there have been studies that show that you get far fewer colds, and this study was done in Great Britain. And, of course, we know that the allicin active in garlic decreases blood pressure and cholesterol. Well, I think this is a good time to consider getting a product like this. I've been taking it all during the winter, and so far I've already escaped any serious colds. Everybody around me has been laid up, and I just keep right on going. The telephone number there is 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. The telephone number for Be Alive Royal Jelly Products is 866-233-7500. Give them a call right now. Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Merrill Nass, and we're talking about the anthrax vaccine. Dr. Nass, what is the incidence of reactions on the part of our servicemen to this vaccine? And, you know, of course, the government says that there's just no reactions at all, and, you know, it's just as totally harmless, but what are the reality of the statistics? Do we have any idea?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. What is the reality? How frequently do people have serious side effects or less serious side effects? We don't know, because the military has not really studied this after 30 days. We know that the rate of acute local side effects can be up to 70%. We know systemic reactions can be up to about 50%. Those are acute reactions. The systemic reactions would be headaches, muscle aches, joint pain, fatigue, nausea, things like this. What happens after 30 days? We have two very, very small studies. One was 12 people who were going to Qatar from the Battle Creek Air National Guard base. 9 of the 12 wound up with some chronic symptoms. We have the study done by a pilot at Dover who sent out questionnaires to 250 of the people in her squadron. She got about 150 responses. Of that 150, about 50% claimed that they had had some chronic problem from the vaccine. And when she assumed that everyone in the group of 100 who didn't respond to her questionnaire had no problem, she came up with a rate of about 27% with chronic symptoms.
Now, what were these chronic symptoms? What sort of things were they experiencing?
Well, the most common thing is fatigue, sleep disturbance, difficulty with concentration, and memory loss.
Very, very similar to the Gulf War syndrome.
Right, identical. Then you get some people who develop hypothyroidism, some with hyperthyroidism, some acute diabetes. I heard about a case of that yesterday.
Now, of course, this is this sort of an autoimmune manifestation?
Well, we think it, we believe it is, because of the nature of so many endocrine complaints, which everybody knows are autoimmune. Testicular failure is not uncommon. Actually, surprisingly enough, I had in my own practice 8 males with testicular failure who either had chronic fatigue syndrome, Gulf War syndrome, or anthrax vaccine syndrome. Seemed like a large number to me of males in their 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Well, of course, that this would be great for population control. I'm not saying that's why it's done, but there are people really who do have a different agenda, who do have a different worldview than the rest of us do. And we certainly see a frightening number of young men and women today, both, who are infertile. About somewhere, their range is getting up around 20-25% of couples are infertile. And there's something really seriously is happening in our society.
Yes, I think you're right. And we don't know what that's all about. And certainly, we don't have pathology on these people. There have been some deaths. 6 deaths have been reported. The only person who has an autopsy that I've seen died of polyarteritis, which is, again, an autoimmune disorder. So I believe that the anthrax vaccine, which is a very, very dirty vaccine, which is now over 100 times stronger than it used to be, probably just overstimulates the immune system, and very likely, due to molecular mimicry, because there are so many different molecules in the vaccine, causes a variety of different autoimmune responses.
Well, could you explain to our listeners what molecular mimicking is? That's a big fancy word. You and I both know, but for the average individual, could you explain to our lay audience?
Well, all that means is that some people who develop autoimmune failure of an organ or a gland do so on the basis that they have had an infection with a microorganism, or perhaps they've been injected with a vaccine that contains a molecule that looks like a molecule in the tissue.
It mimics it.
In the natural tissue, it looks the same. So your body then develops an antibody against this vaccine product or this microorganism. But then the antibodies wind up fighting your own gland or organ as a result, because they look alike.
And, of course, the body can't separate them, and so you develop an immune response to yourself, and that was one of the big problems with the hepatitis B vaccine, this genetically engineered molecule that they had, or gene.
Let me tell you an interesting thing.
Oh, okay.
A colleague of mine has actually studied the adverse reaction reports for hepatitis B vaccine and found that there are two manufacturers of the vaccine in the United States, and one of those manufacturers has 6 to 8 times the adverse reaction rate based on the reports to FDA as the other manufacturer. But because all this information is proprietary, FDA won't let anyone know which is which, so you know which vaccine to buy.
And so it doesn't appear that they're too interested in the fact that one group has 6 to 8 times as many adverse reactions.
Exactly.
But they're more interested in covering up. And this is the tragedy when you have a bureaucracy that is rewarded for incompetence. And, of course, punished if you really get out in the front lines and say, hey, we really got a problem here, because nobody ever wants to hear there's a problem.
And by the way, the reactions that people have to hepatitis B vaccine are very similar to the reactions people report after anthrax vaccine. Only there are more of those adverse reactions after anthrax.
There's really no vaccine that's had more adverse reactions per capita, is there, than the hepatitis B, which we're trying to force people to take, give to their children in the nursery. I mean, this to me is unconscionable. And, of course, really it's all voluntary reporting. And yet, of course, there are so many reports out there, really, of the adverse reactions to the hepatitis B. Now, how many reports do we have of the adverse reactions to the anthrax? Ordinarily, the people don't report them, and the military doesn't encourage reporting, does it?
Well, that's a problem. In fact, I was receiving an email just before you called from a mother of somebody in the military who's already had a fairly significant adverse reaction after the first two shots, but doesn't want to report it, doesn't want to refuse the third shot. Says everything, he's been told everything's going to be okay, and you really are browbeaten if you're a wimp, if you report that you're having problems. It's a serious problem because up until 1999, the military was essentially ordering their doctors not to report adverse reactions unless they met very restricted criteria. Then, after a congressional hearing, they allowed them to report reactions. And now I've seen a document suggesting that they're trying to restrict the adverse reaction reporting by military physicians.
Well, my understanding is that the FDA has a folder that goes with the shots, and it lists, just an incredible percentage of adverse reactions. Have you read that FDA?
Yeah, it doesn't tell you the percentage, but it lists, you're right, the label, the package insert for the vaccine is much improved over the way it was, a year ago or longer. And they actually do report lots of adverse reactions and autoimmune reactions that may occur because they've been reported by many people.
What is the percentage that you recall offhand?
No, they don't give you percentages.
Okay. But they just tell you that there's a significant number of adverse reactions.
Well, they tell you these things have been reported. It's kind of a, you know, let the buyer beware.
All right, but of course, when you're in the military, you don't have any choice.
You don't have access to the package insert anyway. The other thing the FDA did, I have to give them credit for, at least they added these adverse reactions to the package insert, and they made the pregnancy warnings stronger with this new licensure. So they've basically said that now they know there's likely problems with fertility and pregnancy.
But are they testing women to see if they're pregnant before they give them the vaccine?
I don't believe they are. I think they're asking now, which unfortunately they weren't doing last time.
Well, of course, the tragedy is that we have a gigantic social experiment being carried out on our young men and women. We know that at least 200,000 of our service people who went to the Gulf have serious complications from the Gulf War illness. And, of course, a significant number. We don't know how many have died because, of course, there's an effort to keep that concealed. Do you have any idea how many people might have died from Gulf War illness?
That's also a very big and contentious question. I don't believe there are any good data.
The government must have them, but they're just not releasing it.
Well, one thing I think that's interesting is the fact that, do you remember when, after it was reported that Camisea, when it was blown up, the sarin there, affected 100,000 troops. Then the military changed and said, well, 34,000 of those troops weren't really exposed. They were in the wrong area, and it's a different 34,000. Well, when you looked at the death rate in the 34,000 that they said at first was exposed, and the 34,000 that they said later was exposed, it was either 3 per 100 or 3 per 1,000 that had died. So the first group had a 10 times greater death rate.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest, Dr. Merrill Nass, but let me just comment some of the things we have. We have a great four-tape set on the anthrax vaccine. You're not going to find these elsewhere. We also have just a four-tape set on vaccines, the things you need to know about the vaccines to protect yourself and your family. Are vaccines good? Yes, I think some of the vaccines have done some wonderful things. But, of course, at what expense? If you order either one of these tape sets and ask for my June and July newsletter, which gives you an extensive coverage of vaccination and, of course, the do's and don'ts and the problems that have been, why, we'll be glad to send that to you free of charge. We have a wonderful book. It's called Anthrax, A Shot in the Dark. It's written by a lieutenant commander, lieutenant colonel, who sacrificed his military career to bring out the truth about the anthrax vaccine. So that is available, certainly the four-tape set on the anthrax vaccine, the four-tape set on vaccines, the book, Anthrax, A Shot in the Dark, all are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we have that wonderful book by Dr. Blaylock. We really can't keep them in stock. They're going out so fast. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Talking about how you build up your immune system in case of a biological warfare attack. Talking about the impact of fluoride in your drinking water, of mercury that they've been giving to our children in the vaccines. When they knew it was toxic, they knew it was damaging their brains. You need to get the book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and the four-tape set we have that goes with that called Life-Saving Secrets, all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And let me just mention the Miracle 2 soap products and the Phenopoly, both available from the same telephone number. Our four-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5
1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, Dr. Merrill Nass. Dr. Nass, let's get out your website and so people will know how to get in touch with you and get your information.
Yes, that's www.anthraxvaccine.org.
That's just www.anthraxvaccine.org. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, a comment for Dr. Nass, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. So give us a call if you'd like to get some more information, because this is such a vitally important subject. You actually go all over the country giving talks, don't you?
I have. Fortunately, I haven't had to do that lately.
Oh, you haven't had to? All right, fine. Well, let's go to Roger calling in from Allentown. Roger, have a question or comment?
Yes, I'm hoping you'll clarify on several different technical points here and correct any inaccuracies. It was my understanding that with the first anthrax vaccine, the sum total of near human testing was, 10 or 12 monkeys, whom all, I understand, subsequently died from the subsequent anthrax exposure, if that's correct. And then...
No, well, let's just take one question at a time. Do you want to just talk about the initial monkey studies where they took 60 monkeys, and do you have that story?
Well, there have been a variety of monkey studies.
There have?
I'm not really sure which one the reader is referring to.
I think there was one that, of course, this was in the... Judith Miller's book, and of course, she basically said that of the monkeys that were given no treatment at all and exposed, there were 10 of them exposed to anthrax, pulmonary anthrax, they all died, but if they were given the vaccine, 8 of them lived. If they were given Cipro or doxycycline, I think they all lived, and they or almost all lived, and then if they had the vaccine and the Cipro or doxycycline, they all lived.
Right.
Is that what you were thinking of, Roger, or what?
So there was some additional palliative effect.
Oh yes. In fact, if you took the vaccine, some of them with the monkeys, 8 of the 10 lived, as I remember.
Yeah, and do we see on the horizon for the new vaccine at least...
Am I correct on that, Dr. Nass? Because you probably are better
yes,
on that.
Yes, that's approximately right. They only had a couple of controls which died. That was an experiment that was published in 1993, where they actually also gave Cipro to a group of monkeys and penicillin to a group and doxycycline.
Right.
And... if they only gave the antibiotics for a month and then stopped, a certain percentage of the monkeys died after the antibiotic was stopped. But if they vaccinated, most of the monkeys would live during that period. However, they could have given the antibiotic for a longer period of time, and then that probably would have avoided the deaths. Of course, we have another problem now, which nobody identified in the monkey trials because they sacrifice all the monkeys after the experiments are over. And that is that of the 6 people who survived inhalation anthrax last year, 5 of them remain chronically ill. And nobody is trying to figure out what is going on with them and how they can be fixed. And no one is making any effort to come up with a way of treating them or dealing with this so that if the United States is attacked and we all take Cipro, we don't all become invalids afterwards.
And I think it's really so interesting that a lot of those people who are ill have memory problems. They just can't think clearly, almost like some of the people who've taken the anthrax vaccine.
Yes.
Probably even worse, though.
Yeah. Well, I think it's severe in both cases. Severe enough so that people can't go back to work and can't manage to do very much.
Right.
It is certainly possible that the same toxins in the vaccine, because the vaccine is a toxin-based vaccine, and the toxins that they developed from anthrax growing in their bodies are causing the same problem. But again, somebody needs to figure that out, and that doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, now, of course, is the vaccine both the dead bacteria and the toxin, or is it primarily toxin-based?
Well, they take dead bacteria and then add aluminum hydroxide, which is a gel, actually, and it binds mostly to proteins, but other things in the mix get also stuck to it. And then they put it in a centrifuge, and whatever goes to the bottom of the centrifuge becomes your vaccine.
All right, fine. Anything else, Roger?
Am I correct in my, as I'm given to understand, that the adverse reaction reporting system probably has safely under 10% compliance? I'm thinking even
yes.
Most well-intentioned doctors are not necessarily going to solicit for patients for adverse reactions
right.
or want to report them. It doesn't reflect well on his practice, does it?
And the doctors basically have already attended a series of lectures where they're told that anthrax vaccine doesn't cause problems, and they come to realize very early on that if they start reporting reactions, they're going to be in trouble.
And of course, especially if you're a military doctor, now, that would not be so much in the general the medical community, but certainly if you're in the military, you better very well do what you're told to do, even if it means, of course, you're going to be harming your people. There's one doctor in the military who just said he wasn't going to give the vaccines, and boy, did they make his life miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Fined him, what, $40,000 and, you know, ruined
mm-hmm.
his career. And,
yeah.
And, you know, here was a doctor who was just trying to do what doctors are supposed to do, and that is save human lives and be concerned about our health. But he was accordingly punished.
He had a court-martial, confined to base for 2 months. He was fined $21,000, and then there was some possibly $14,000 more. And then, guess what? They deployed him anyway, sent him overseas without the vaccine. He did such a good job, they gave him a medal.
Okay.
For something else. And then he got out of the military and has been very happy to be out.
Well, I don't blame him at all. And what a tragedy, you know. They've lied to the American people about the effects of Agent Orange up until just recently when they've said, oh, yes, you do get leukemia and lymphoma from it. Yes, now we're going to give you disability. Now, what are we? We're war-ended, 1970.
Mm-hmm.
22, 23 years later, they finally decided to tell the truth. They've known all along. But they don't want the American people to know that they've been lying. So anyway, anything else, Roger?
Yeah, lastly, am I correct in the assumption, well, not assumption so much, but that vaccines broadly, there's not a single vaccine that really has been subjected to any sort of risk-benefit analysis, and now you have, what, hundreds of doctors, not with the disgusting AMA, but at least out in California with the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, calling for sort of a broad moratorium on vaccines. God bless you all.
Okay, I don't know anything about
that.
Thank you.
I know the American Association certainly has concerns about vaccines, as do I. In fact, they're very similar. I don't think that anybody has really good data on adverse reaction rates for any vaccine. The FDA has never required long-term reaction rates. You know, when anthrax vaccine was licensed, they looked up to 48 hours, and that was it for adverse reactions. Nowadays, they look up to a month. But if you're, you know, still lying on the couch a year later, nobody's going to know about it unless you report.
Well, of course, they did have the rotavirus vaccine that they gave to infants to stop this rotavirus diarrhea. And, of course, what happened was that, you know, they gave it a very short trial, and they had a couple of, a lot of kids had intussusception, and one of them died. But they totally ignored the sick children and died, and they licensed it, and they gave it to I don't know how many millions of children. And then they began developing this intussusception or strangulation of the bowel form of invagination, and several of them died. And then, of course, they withdrew it, but they should have had long-term trials before they released this. And because they're so anxious to get the profits, they sacrificed the lives of children on the altar of expediency. And that is unconscionable. And, of course, it's all licensed by the government, and you can't sue the drug companies, so you have no comeback. All you have is a dead child, and that is so terrible to contemplate. And yet, of course, this is what happens in America today.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that was a terrible thing. First of all, did we really even need rotavirus vaccine? There are only about 30 children per year that died in the United States of rotavirus, and they died because they were dehydrated, and if we simply taught moms and fathers how to hydrate their children and what to watch for, we probably could have taken care of those deaths without any treatment for what is normally a minor diarrheal illness.
And I agree with you totally, but of course it seems that they really, it was a gigantic social experiment that went wrong, or I should say another social experiment that went wrong. That's really what the hepatitis B is, giving it a social experiment to see if, a generation later, why we can cut down on the hepatitis B if people are promiscuous. But, of course, this is a disease of IV drug users, of promiscuous, heterosexually promiscuous people, or of homosexuals, that it is not a problem in children unless, of course, mother has hepatitis B.
Mm-hmm.
You can determine that if you did a blood test on her. Instead of that, we vaccinate everybody, and of course we take away your children, at least some instances, if you refuse to have the vaccine, because of course this is being done for the common good. In fact, there was an article I read today talking about smallpox vaccine, and it said, you don't take smallpox vaccine to help yourself. You do it to protect the public. You do it to create a herd immunity. What are they talking about?
Yeah, well, I mean, many vaccines, of course, are taken for that reason. And for the people who don't take vaccines and don't get sick, they're relying on the herd immunity of the rest of the population that keeps a lot of diseases out. You know, if most of the population is vaccinated, smallpox won't get a stronghold. It won't be able to spread widely if it does, in fact, appear. Of course, you know, where did the anthrax come from? It came from the army, and
you're talking about the anthrax attack.
The anthrax letters,
Dick Cheney obviously knew about it because he started on anthrax on the evening of the September 11th attack, or at least they suspected it was coming. But of course they didn't tell anybody. So he and his staff took Cipro, but they didn't bother to tell anybody else. They wanted to keep it a secret.
Yes. Well, and the thing is now, you know, there was no smallpox on the planet, but smallpox has been now given to monkeys at CDC. So, you know, smallpox genie may be out of the bottle also, and hopefully it's not going to come from CDC, but
why would they give it? If there's no smallpox other than locked away, why would they give it to monkeys?
Good question. But I think there is one innocent reason, which is that if monkeys could be made to get smallpox, which required huge doses be given them, then at least you could test therapies in the monkey.
Well, of course, that's all very well and good, but, you know, if we don't let the smallpox genie out of the bottle, there's not going to be any genie wandering around our streets or infecting our people. And this is really what's so concerning to me is what, if I thought that everybody was noble and right and justice and altruistic, I wouldn't be concerned, but I believe there's evil in the world. And I believe that you really can't necessarily trust people with power, because many times that will be misused. We're going to have to take another break, and this is a time when we have to, of course, remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're dependent upon you out there in the listening audience if you believe in what we're doing to help us. And we hope that many of you will, of course, want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, which is how we're able to finance what we do 5 hours every day. And, of course, on some 34, 35 stations on the weekend. But we have a unique opportunity to reach people all across America. And with your help and with your support, we're doing that. But quite frankly, we need your joining the Radio Liberty family, or telling other people about our programs, or getting our material off the website and helping us to circulate so we can build that base of support so we can continue doing what we do, of reaching people all across America from sea to shining sea. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. That's 1-800-544-8927, and give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters. You can listen to our programs there 3 hours a day and link to the other networks we're on for the other 2 hours, and you won't get much of anything accomplished, but at least you'll have a lot of fascinating information, because we get a lot of fascinating guests like Dr. Merrill Nass, who's with us today. And then, of course, we hope that you will make it a point to get on radio talk shows, to write letters to the editor, to disseminate my newsletters, to disseminate the programs. You're welcome to copy the programs, to copy any of the videos we've made, and help people to begin to understand that there is an organized effort to create a new world order and a new world religion, and both of these will be a new ruling elite. We're moving towards a corporate socialist world with a ruling elite, and it will come about if the good people aren't involved. This is a fascinating four-tape set, Genocide, and one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America, the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today. Yes, and Dr. Day was actually the medical director of National Planned Parenthood for a matter of several years, shortly after the interview, or the talk he'd given. Well, our guest today is Dr. Meryl Nass, and of course she is dedicated to getting the truth out about vaccines, and specifically about the anthrax vaccine. That's been a very real concern of hers, and of course all the service people who've become ill afterwards, a certain number of them have died, and some of them have really been incapacitated and unable to return to their duty. And the question is, why are they so intent upon giving this vaccine to our service people when they are having as many adverse reactions as they are? Makes me very concerned that there is a reason why they're doing this, and the only question is, what is that reason? Now, if you're out there across America, like to give us a call, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Dr. Nass, have you been looking into this smallpox issue, and what are your thoughts about the fact that they're talking about initially immunizing 500,000 healthcare workers, and then going ahead and with the second phase immunizing up to 10.5 million healthcare workers, as well as, of course, the military? What is going on, since we are told there is no smallpox? We're told, of course, that all the smallpox, at least until recently, was locked away at the CDC and over in Russia, and of course until they started using it experimentally in the CDC. But why are they so concerned about smallpox? It's a terrible, terrible disease, but there have been no cases. Why are we waiting until there are cases before we start immunizing everybody?
Well, of course, you know, what most people are saying is that this is a pro-war, you know, policy, that this is to get everybody scared about smallpox and gear them up for the war against Iraq. Or that maybe Iraq does have smallpox and vaccinating will allow us to, you know, who knows? I personally think it is a political ploy, perhaps similar to the swine flu vaccine program of 1976, in which President Ford was induced to offer a national vaccine program. Because vaccines, you know, basically they have a good name. You know, they're a holy cow. Most people don't think there are problems with vaccines. Most people think that every vaccine is risk-free.
Until, of course, their child develops
autism
or dies.
Right. And then they become an anti-vaccine person, and they become, you know, a crazy or a fringe person. But anyway, so they brought this crazy swine flu vaccine in. The manufacturers then, as now, said, we don't want to pay for liability. We want the government to take on the liability. This is a new vaccine you're asking us to make. So the government took on the liability. Turned out there was a high rate of reactions, mostly Guillain-Barré. There was no swine flu. You know, the soldier at Fort Dix got it, maybe one other person, and that was it. So there was no epidemic and millions of people with a vaccine that caused high rate of reactions.
And some of the people died of the Guillain-Barré, as I remember.
Yes, there were some deaths, and that stopped the program. So nowadays, I think the idea was George Bush would be saving us, and we would be grateful for him, and we'd be so grateful that, you know, the government was doing us a big favor to give us this 30- to 50-year-old vaccine for free. Of course, it's worthless. You can't sell it. It's not worth anything because it's expired, many decades expired. But they're going to give it to us for free, and we're so grateful that we are not going to demand compensation. So if we're a healthcare worker and I become ill, it's my sick time or my pay that I lose. And fortunately, you know, the healthcare professionals in this country realized that this was not such a good deal after all, that there's no smallpox out there. Why should they take a vaccine that is acknowledged to be one of the most dangerous vaccines around, that made over a third of the college students who got it in a trial miss work or miss going to school, made them that sick. And people said, hey, you know, we don't want to assume the liability for government program to protect us from a disease that doesn't exist on the face of the earth anymore.
That's very good. We're being protected from a disease we're told doesn't exist on the face of the earth. So, you know, the whole thing just doesn't make sense. You know,
particularly since you can be vaccinated 4 days after you're exposed to smallpox and it will still protect you.
Right.
So if there is a risk, fine, get the vaccine to every community and give them enough to vaccinate people, and once smallpox does rear its ugly head, we'll all get vaccinated.
Well, you know, the most fascinating part of this whole scenario, Dr. Nass, is this. I mean, I don't like Saddam Hussein. I think he's a wicked and evil man. But if Saddam Hussein had a smallpox, he's not going to release it here in the United States because it would spread over to Iraq, and there's no vaccine over in Iraq, and it would kill, you know, I don't know how many tens of millions or hundreds of millions of Muslim people throughout the world because they don't have any vaccine. They've only gotten the vaccine for the American people and for some of the Israelis and a few British people, but we are the only ones that have large supplies of smallpox vaccine, aren't we?
Well, the Russians also.
Do the Russians have it for their people?
We don't know how much vaccine they have, but certainly they did have it for the workers in their VW program.
Right.
Actually, a number of countries do have some limited supplies of vaccine.
But, of course, nobody has this amount to protect the whole population that we have here.
No. Israel's been making it,
right.
And they had a lot of problems with their... Well, they didn't admit it. They said they only had four reactions, but it turned out one of them was certainly a life-threatening reaction and was in the hospital for several weeks. And they stopped it. They scaled down their program after starting it.
Well, my understanding is back in the 70s, why the Japanese and the Germans both had a fairly safe smallpox vaccine, much safer than the vaccine we were using.
Mm-hmm.
Had you looked into that at all?
People say that the Japanese vaccine and the Israeli vaccine are less dangerous than
right.
ours. But, you know, there's not really, again, there's not good data, to be sure. The other question is there are certain strains of smallpox which may evade the vaccine. And because mousepox was made vaccine resistant with the addition of one gene, it concerns people that smallpox also could be made vaccine resistant with the addition of one or two genes.
Well, it was very interesting. I was just reading something I got from my local public health department today that said, you know, with your first vaccination, I think you were at immunity for 10 or 15 years. With your second vaccination, you would have immunity for 30 years. And I was vaccinated back in about 1973 or 1974 before I went to Africa. So I would still have immunity to that. My family would. People were vaccinated the second or third time. Why, of course, apparently that immunity lasts quite a while. Is that true?
Well, again, it depends on your immune system.
Yeah.
As people age, they tend to respond less well to vaccines. and they, you know, the immunity wears off. So that of the people who get tetanus in the United States, it's usually the elderly. There's many people who haven't been vaccinated for tetanus for 30 or 40 years. You know, and kids play in the dirt all the time, but it's the elderly who get those infections. If you give a group of elderly in a nursing home the flu vaccine, and then you go back after 2 months to see who has antibodies, you find that only 20 to 30% of the nursing home recipients have made antibodies to the flu vaccine. So, again, it's very individual.
What do you feel about this idea of we should do the things that will build up our immune system, taking vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, selenium?
I love it. I take all those things. They make me feel much better. There's good data to show that they reduce the rates of many diseases. I think, you know, what this country should be doing is telling people to take vitamins.
Well, of course, this is what we're really our thrust, and we have, I don't know if you've seen this wonderful book by Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's a neurosurgeon, but Health Secrets That Can and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and he lists all the things to do using natural products to build up your immunity, including the things we mentioned and a number of other ones as well. And so I'm so glad that you, you know, are certainly supporting that approach, because that's the approach we're taking right now. You know, it's up to the individual to look after themselves, and you can build up your immune system, and it doesn't do any good to take a vaccine if your immune system isn't going to respond normally. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners today?
I would say, one interesting thing about smallpox vaccine is that they claim they've licensed it for the military, but they haven't licensed it for civilians. Civilians have to sign an informed consent, you know, that they can't sue, etc. But military, they've licensed it because that way they can force them all to take it.
Right.
So it's just another example of the FDA behaving in really an unconscionable manner.
All right. Well, I really appreciate so very much your being with us, Dr. Nass. And, you know, I'm so glad you're out there getting the information out that I don't have time to do the research on. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I'll always learn something when I come.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, that was Dr. Meryl Nass, and I hope that you enjoy our conversation. She's certainly one of the people who's on the front lines of this battle, a doctor who is totally dedicated to helping others, and I certainly commend her for her effort. And I was so pleased to hear that she is, of course, agreeing with Dr. Blaylock and myself, and this small group of doctors is saying, look, you cannot get enough of vaccines to protect yourself against every one of the potential 50 or more different diseases that can be used for biological warfare. You have to start looking after yourself. You have to learn the things to take to build up your immunity. And as I've mentioned many times on this program, I've been taking things this winter, and everybody else around me has been cutting the flu and having all sorts of things. And I think I've done remarkably well. And I see my friends laid up for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks with the flu bug, and I had a little trouble about half a day, and I was back working. But you need to know how to do it. And, of course, we cover that very well in our four-tape set, Life-Saving Secrets, or certainly in the book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. So we hope that you'll want to get the information, you'll want to begin getting the products, you'll have a supply on hand. Let's hope and pray that the terrible things that we talk about never do occur. But if they do occur, you want to be prepared. It's far better to be prepared and not need any of the products than to need them and find out there's panic, they're not available, and, of course, who would you blame at that point? So, well, this is the time we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, for our leaders, to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
Who are we talking to?
William.